I call the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting to order on February 28, 2023. There is a quorum present. We are going to do the approval of minutes for February 21, 2023. Representative Green, may I have a motion to approve the minutes from February 21, 2023?
So moved.
Representative Green moves the approval of the minutes for February 21, 2023. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor saying aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for February 21st, 2023 are approved. Our first bill for today is Representative Cleborn, House File 1492. Thank you for being here. Members, I see that we have snacks in committee today, and just a disclaimer that they do contain nuts if there's anyone with nut allergies. And so with that, Representative Cleborn, the first bill we have is since you're not on the committee, I will move that House File 1492 be laid over for possible inclusion and to your bill. Representative Cleborn.
Thank you, Chair Vang. And as always, agriculture has a special place in my heart, and I'm glad to be before this committee, which I served on for 4 years. Today we are here to discuss Forever Green, and in particular, I would like to discuss the ongoing research dollars needed for Forever Green, and then also money, one-time money for equipment usage as well. For those of you who may not know, the Forever Green Initiative is the University of Minnesota's is nationally recognized research effort designed to develop new, economically viable perennial crops and winter annual crops, commonly referred to as cover crops. Integrating perennial and winter annual crops into existing farm systems provides growers with new revenue streams and new marketing options that can bolster our agricultural economy through development of high-value, commercially marketable food, feed, and fuel products. And you are fortunate to be able to sample some of those commercially available products right now. In the bill, I'd just like to speak to the bill itself, and then I will ask our testifiers to please speak more about the Forever Green Initiative. So you will see in the bill a $2 million request for fiscal 24 and a $2 million ongoing request for fiscal 25. And this is money that would go from the general fund to the Commissioner of Agriculture for grants to be used by the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota to fund the Forever Green Initiative to protect our state's natural resources, increase efficiency, profitability, and productivity for Minnesota's farmers by incorporating these perennial and winter annual crops into existing agricultural practices. Also in the bill, you will see $10 million, which is a one-time appropriation in fiscal 24, to be appropriated from the general fund to the Commissioner of Agriculture for grants to be used by the University of Minnesota to purchase and maintain equipment and physical infrastructure to support this research. It will support breeding, agronomic research, and food science activities for the Forever Green Initiative. This is a one-time appropriation, and you'll see in the bill that it's available until 2028, and that is so that as the equipment is needed, the purchases can be made. So with that, Madam Chair, I would ask for you to please go to the testifiers. Thank you.
All right. Our first testifier is Dr. Mitch Hunter. Please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Chair Vang and members of the committee, my name is Mitch Hunter. I'm the Associate Director of the Forever Green Initiative at the University of Minnesota and my parents' farm outside of Wabasha. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today about HF 1492 and HF 1645, which I'll touch on briefly. And thank you to Representatives Cleborn and Brand for proposing these bills. Before I dive in, I want to tell you about the food samples we'll be sharing with you today. And also, my colleague Nick Jordan is passing out some bags of seed so you can touch and feel the seeds of these crops. All three of the samples feature crops in the Forever Green portfolio. We have two products made with Kernza, the world's first perennial grain. One is a cereal from Cascadian Farms, which is a General Mills company. And another is crackers made by Perennial Pantry, a local startup based in Northfield. And we have the founder of Perennial Pantry in the room. You'll be hearing from him on the next bill. And then we also have hazelnut snackers made from Midwest-grown hazelnuts. So you can all taste and sample the sort of crops that we're working on. Forever Green is a research platform at the University of Minnesota developing winter annual and perennial crops for inclusion in existing cropping systems. These new crops complement our existing crops and build on their strengths by providing continuous living cover on the soil, which means crops growing all year round. This helps protect soil and water resources and also create new economic opportunities for farmers and rural communities. In Forever Green, we are addressing a fundamental issue in Minnesota agriculture, which is the lack of plant cover on our soils in the spring and fall. As you can see in these satellite images, the soil is brown until May and even into June, and then again by October. This means that it's vulnerable, that nutrients can be easily lost to lakes, streams, and groundwater, and it's also a missed opportunity to grow food in these two times of the year. Forever Green crops fill in this brown period and turn it green. As you can see here on the top, the difference between a fall-tilled field in the fall and a Kernza field when a whole inch of rain falls. Soil moves or soil is held in place. On the bottom, you can see the difference between a typical tilled field getting ready for summer crops and a field of winter camelina where it's already completely covering the soil with green plants in April. So the benefits of this are clear for soil health and soil carbon and for water quality. Now, Kernza and winter camelina are just two of our crops. We are working on over 15 crops and associated cropping systems, and all are designed to keep the soil covered all year round. Because of that continuous cover, these new crops can provide a wide range of environmental benefits. I don't have time to go into all of them in detail. They can also provide ingredients for a wide variety of different types of products. And these products can lead to new economic opportunities for farmers and for rural businesses. We at Forever Green pursue this vision by building collaborative teams that couple research and commercialization. And these two elements are reflected in the two bills before you today. HF 1492 supports our research and commercialization activities at the University of Minnesota, and HF 1645 supports private businesses and other organizations that are building the supply chain for these crops. So to get you a little bit more detail, the base research funding in HF 1492 would give us stability in Forever Green and allow us to deliver new crops for Minnesota farmers. Our top priority is to stabilize the key positions that currently lack dedicated funding, and that includes our plant breeders, the key people who are actually working to improve these crops. The funding would also help us support day-to-day management and provide opportunities for graduate students. This bill also includes one-time funding for equipment and infrastructure to address critical gaps facing our key disciplines and our scientists in those disciplines. Now, these scientists have developed lists of proposals that total over $20 million. The actual need to meet these gaps is even greater. So this $10 million request would allow us to start addressing that need. And together, this investment would lead to new scientific discoveries that drive faster progress toward our goals. It would allow us to accomplish even more with our state research dollars, including the Clean Water Fund dollars. And it would help us continue attracting large federal grants to leverage the state money. HF 1645 would complement these outcomes and help drive real-world impact. It would provide funds to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture for grants to businesses and other organizations that are commercializing these crops, with an initial focus on Kernza, hazelnuts, winter camelina, and elderberry. The idea for this program was developed in partnership with small businesses in 2021, and it's based on the Minnesota Renewable Development Fund, which has spurred the rapid expansion of renewable energy and created many businesses and jobs along the way. The grant program in this bill received a pilot funding of $500,000 in the last session, out of an initial request of $10 million. And MDA is planning to launch that pilot in the coming weeks. But it's clear that the demand and the need will far outstrip the available funds for this program. So this bill would provide the funds needed to take this program to scale. And this investment will root these new industries here in Minnesota. It will help them break through bottlenecks and accelerate growth, leading to jobs in rural communities, and it will build demand for Forever Green crops so that farmers can grow them profitably. In closing, Forever Green is a win for farmers, entrepreneurs, and the environment, and we need your support to make this vision a reality. So thank you for considering these bills, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Hunter. Next testifier is Ann Swagirl. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed. Thank you.
Absolutely. Chair Vang, members, thank you for allowing me to speak today. For the record, my name is Ann Swagirl. I'm a grain farmer in Big Stone County in western Minnesota and the vice president of Minnesota Farmers Union. And I am here speaking in support of Representative Cleavorn's bill, House File 1492. On behalf of the members of Minnesota Farmers Union, I wish to share my strong support for Representative Cleavorn's work to fund the Forever Green Initiative at the University of Minnesota. This foundational investment is central to the successful development and commercialization of perennial and winter annual cover crops, which will help our family farmer members across the state of Minnesota add value and diversity to their farming operations, deliver important ecosystem benefits, and remain resilient in the face of climate change. Speaking with my farmer hat on now, on my grain farm in the headwaters of the Minnesota River watershed, we have been using perennial and winter annual crops developed locally at the Forever Green Initiative at the U over the past 3 years since the MN Clearwater variety of CRISA was released. Not only does extending our crop rotation with cash cover and perennial grain crops add additional revenue streams to my farm, these crops also help spread out the risk that I see on my family farming operation. One example is that this last May, after a wet late spring, the ground had finally dried out enough for us to get our corn crop in. 3 days later, we experienced a pounding 3.5-inch rain that hit our farm hard. Now, we were fortunate enough to be spared the derecho winds that came that same storm knocked down many grain bins and trees just a few miles east of us. But the black dirt of our cornfields promptly crusted over, causing delayed emergence of our corn crop, which led to headaches throughout the growing season for that crop. Uneven pollination and dry down, lower yields than anticipated, etc. I will note we also had winter cameline in the ground at the same time, and it managed to hold that, even though it was very small little plants at the point, in early May, held the soil in place, and that was on the same quarter of land. However, the field just a quarter mile away that has been planted into CRISA for the last 2 years behaved like a sponge. It took that pounding, driving rain and rolled with it. And when the spigot turned off from Mother Nature in late June and Big Stone County entered yet another drought, the CRISA field outperformed our expectations. I look forward to the upcoming genetic and agronomic developments from the University's Forever Green Initiative that will continue making this funding a smart investment for the future of rural Minnesota's economy and landscape. I value the university's continued partnership with farmers like myself in developing these new cropping systems in a way that supports farmers and rural economic vitality. I appreciate your consideration today. I want to thank Representative Cleavorn for her ongoing leadership on this bill, and would be happy to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. And then our next one is Alexandra Griffin. Please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Hi, good afternoon, Chair Vang and members of the committee. My name is Alexandra Griffin. I'm a graduate student in Applied Plant Sciences at the University of Minnesota. I'm an ecologist and a crop scientist, and I care deeply about making our food system more just and sustainable. And today I want to speak briefly with you about my research and how the Forever Green Initiative has shaped and supported my experience as a graduate student in support of the proposed bills. I work as part of the Forever Green Initiative because I believe soil health is a kind of shared public good, and my research is motivated by a desire to support land stewards to build nutrient-rich soils and protect water quality in the Mississippi River watershed, like the other testifiers you've heard from already. So I work on the plant roots of the perennial grain crop Kernza because these roots are really at the center of the environmental benefits that we hope these perennial crops can provide. But across the plant sciences, research on roots is limited because it's just really hard to see what's going on below ground. But in the case of perennial grains like Kernza, we can't afford to ignore these roots. We really want to know how the root system is affecting what's going on above ground in terms of yield and above ground productivity. Through a grant from the Forever Green Initiative, we are able to purchase a piece of equipment called a rhizotron camera, which is a new technique which allows researchers to photograph roots underground in the soil over multiple years. And that's been able to give us really valuable insights into the shapes and dynamics of the roots, and I'm really excited to be able to use this research method. So using these Rhizotron cameras, I'm trying to uncover root traits that are associated with higher grain yields and yield stability over time. And these are the kind of novel research methods that legislative funding for FGI, for the Forever Green Initiative, can support. And another thing I want to say in support of the legislator continuing to fund this initiative is that I chose to come to the University of Minnesota in part because of this, the Forever Green program. As I was looking for opportunities to pursue research on continuous living cover and graduate school, the U really stood out to me because it had this partnership that brought together multiple sectors. And I felt like research I could do here had the best chance of being translated into meaningful changes on the landscape, which is no small thing, because of the collaborative work between farmers and supply chain specialists, environmental nonprofits, and researchers. I heard a saying recently that you can't do good work unless you know what story you're a part of, and I think the Forever Green Initiative facilitates its participants in seeing ourselves as part of a larger story or a larger effort. And because of that, we're able to work in concert to protect the waters and the soils and the croplands of our region. Thanks so much for your attention today. And for these reasons, I'm testifying in support of the proposed bills. Thank you.
All right, thank you. I see there are no amendments to the bill, so we'll move on to discussion. Discussion to the bill. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To any of the testifiers, Kearns has been around for a while, and just wondering what has kept it or what is keeping it from becoming a scalable level product to be used more in mainstream agriculture.
Dr. Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question. You're right, it's been around for a while, but in the scope of things, as far as crops go, it's a pretty short while. I believe that, you know, the first commercial planting was around 10 or 12 years ago, and that's really quite a short amount of time for a crop to develop as compared to, let's say, wheat, which has been, you know, developed by farmers for at least 10,000 years. So we're really just on the cusp still, and even in that short time, even since we released our very first variety in 2019-2020, we have seen rapid growth of acreage. So, you know, the number of farmers and the number of acres has increased by large percentage amounts each year until now. And I think that is a mark of the success of our program. And at the same time, there are real challenges that we recognize. We are the first to say that there are challenges with the productivity of Kearnsa, and that's why we're investing so much in continued breeding of the crop to bring those productivity levels up, those yield levels up that farmers need to be, for it to be ultimately profitable in the long term, to move from the more niche markets into more of the mainstream. And there are challenges like that along the chain, which is why we are organized in such a comprehensive way. You'll hear from entrepreneurs in the next bill who are working on some of those next challenges along the chain to bring a crop like this to the market. And we are trying to be strategic and invest at all of those points along the pathway to bring these crops forward into kind of full fruition in the marketplace.
Members, we do have a full agenda, so if you can keep your remarks brief as well. Representative Anderson.
Just a quick follow-up, Madam Chair. Could you give us just a rough idea what an average yield might be and what the price per pound is for Kearnsa?
Dr. Hunter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, a rough yield might be 600 to 1,000 pounds in the first year of production, that's per acre, going down a little bit in the second year and then perhaps in half in the third year. So that's another challenge. It declines each year. And as far as a price per pound of clean grain that would be sold to a food company or for seed, we are seeing everything from around $2 a pound to $5 or $6 a pound. That's prices that are being seen in the marketplace. And that range speaks to the novelty, the newness of the crop, and the fact that it's still really in a price discovery phase.
Representative Anderson. Representative Jacob.
Representative Jacob. Thank you, Chair Vang. So with respect to cover crops that are used spring and fall, not as the primary crop like the Kearnsa, so can those crops compete with the primary crop? Or do they?
Dr. Hunter?
Might they?
Madam Chair, great question. They can, and that's why we don't just focus on the one crop, we focus on the whole system. So for instance, one of the crops that fits that profile is winter camelina. You plant it in the fall, often following a small grain or a corn silage. It overwinters and harvests, let's say, mid to late June. And we've developed systems to follow that with soybeans and even interplant the soybeans into the camelina. What we found is that, yes, the soybean yield often takes a hit, and as we've done more research, we've been able to reduce that. But when you add it together and you take the yield from winter camelina and the yield from the soybean, you can get 50% more yield in that year from the two crops than if you just grew a regular full-season soybean. So it is a challenge that we work through, but we're trying to design systems that end up with more than what you started with, and we've had success on that.
Representative Jacob?
So say like with the use of winter rye and after beans, something like that, before it goes into the following crop, probably corn, are farmers using chemicals to terminate that crop?
Dr. Hunter?
Madam Chair, typically, yes, organic farmers would use tillage or another method, but conventional farmers would typically terminate a crop like winter rye with herbicide application. In the case of Forever Green system, we would want to bring that cover crop to the point where it's got a harvestable yield so that farmers can make money off of that harvest, and then that changes what you rotate into. You probably won't rotate into corn in Minnesota. There's not enough time left, so you might rotate into another one of our winter crops that gets planted in the fall. But yes, you're right that in a conventional scenario, that rye would be terminated with a herbicide and then the next crop would be planted.
Representative Jacob?
So either way, whether you're organic and using tillage or whether you're conventional and using spray, it's an additional carbon footprint on the property because there's an additional pass. Your tractor's going, and further land disturbance, which then would leave that soil vulnerable to erosion again if you used organic process to remove the crop mechanically. So I see all the benefits listed here, and coincidentally, I practice this myself. I use cover crops, so I believe in doing the right thing. But the Forever Green, and I look at the number of years that I've seen here. 2017, 1.5 million, 2019, 4.3 million, 2021, 4,632,000. I like to do things on my farm that become just a good practice without needing government money, and I will. Do you ever see this getting to the point where the farmer just says, hey, this is a good idea, I don't need government money? Or will we get there? Because it looks like Forever Green could mean Forever Green dollars funding it.
Dr. Hunt? Hunter?
Madam Chair, that's a very important point to bring up, and that model is baked directly into our DNA. That's why we want to have these not just be cover crops that you might do out of the goodness of your heart, or because you think that in 10 plus years your soil is going to be better and you can get more yield. We want cover crops that farmers can sell. And yes, we're still on the front end of this. It takes public research investment to bring a crop to fruition. Soybean right now is grown on 8 million acres in the state of Minnesota. And go back 80 years, it wasn't even a crop. It took investment in our public institutions. The University of Minnesota, my department, developed that crop and pushed it on the landscape. And now it's something that's fundamental to our cropping systems. We're on the front end of a similar type of transformation, we think, to a market-based system where, just like you're saying, it's a good practice. It's good for the soil. It's good for the bottom line. There's a company that wants to buy it on the other end. And that's exactly the type of system that we are working to set up. So we're talking on a regular basis to large food companies, large commodity dealers, even large oil and energy companies that are interested in these winter oil seeds because they see the potential for millions of acres of winter camelina and pennycress across the Midwest feeding into low-carbon fuel markets. And for them, it's a business opportunity. And so that means that there's got to be a profit motive for the farmer as well. That profit motive, that economic pull, is essential to why we're pursuing these for-profit cover crops and not just a traditional model of cover cropping, which is also good, but it's harder to ingrain that and make it just an essential part of a farmer's system when it doesn't pay back to the bottom line.
All right. Closing remarks, Representative Cleaver.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee, and I appreciate the opportunity to be with you today. And I want to say to everyone that we understand that there is nothing more precious to a farmer than good soil health and taking good care of their natural resources. And I applaud you for the work that you do there. And this is a way to help bring additional economic benefit while you are also caring for your soil and your natural resources. It's a win-win, and I ask for your support in this very much needed and important research dollar. Thank you.
Right. I renew my motion that House File 1192 be laid over for possible inclusion. House File 1192 is laid over for possible inclusion. The next bill we have is House File 1645, Representative Brand on continuous living cover crops. Since you are not on the committee, welcome back to the committee, Representative Brand. I will move that House File 1645 be laid over for possible inclusion. And whenever you're ready, Representative Brand, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It is great to be back in the Ag Committee. I am happy and pleased to introduce House File 1645 today. It's continuous living cover crop value chain development grants. And so this bill would provide $1 million worth of grants in base funding and a one-time appropriation of $10 million to the Department of Agriculture to provide grants to Minnesota businesses that are developing the supply chain for the bill that we had just talked about, for the Forever Green, for the perennial and winter annual crops. And this builds on a pilot program that was first funded last session and for which the Minnesota Department of Agriculture is seeking proposals actually within the next month here. It's no coincidence that we're talking about these two bills together, especially with Representative Cleavorn's bill to fund Forever Green. But I want to note that this program is solely limited for forever green crops, and so it could support grassland-based livestock, agroforestry, and a number of other systems that also meet the criteria in addition to the forever green suite of different products. And so this would provide continuous living cover. These bills are complementary, as I mentioned. House File 1492 funds crop research and development, and while my bill invests in businesses that are putting these crops to use, especially in the marketplace. We can't just invest in science because without businesses, there's really nowhere for these crops to go. We can't just do that. And so, you know, I think it's important that these crops and cropping systems still need to be optimized and to reach their environmental, nutritional, and yield potential. You know, we need to do both. Our Representative Cleaver mentioned that the broad base of support for this will work. I will draw you to a couple of documents you'll find in your packet. One is the CLC Value Chain Development Fund Economic Justification and Impact Statement. Please take a look at that. You might have some additional questions that might be answered on that or also that might come out of it. And then also there is another, there is another one here. This is the Minnesota House Agriculture Support Value Chain Businesses. On the back, you'll see a whole host of organizations that also support this as well from across the entire state of Minnesota. Without further ado, what I will do now is turn it over to my testifiers.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for being here today. If you can limit your testimony to under 2 minutes, that would be great. Our first one is Christopher Abbott. If you can identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Vang, and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1645. My name is Christopher Abbott, and I'm the founder of Perennial Pantry, a Kernza processor and food company in Burnsville. We buy Kernza directly from farmers and turn it into grain, flour, crackers, pasta, and other products. My business strongly supports this legislation. As you heard in the previous testimony from Forever Green, the state of Minnesota has a compelling public interest in diversifying our agricultural landscape by advancing continuous living cover crops. To sustainably scale these efforts, we need to find ways to accomplish this that make money rather than cost money over the long term, which is why a market-based approach is so important. However, we need help kickstarting the flywheel. It takes time and investment to grow new markets from the ground up. Most of this investment will come from the private sector, but this bill would greatly help accelerate new industries through entrepreneurial businesses like mine. The state and Forever Green have worked in unison on the continuous living cover flywheel, and bringing entrepreneurship under the umbrella of state support is the key to building momentum until a point of breakthrough. Farmers will have companies to sell to, consumers will have products to buy, and the state's early investment will grow the tax base, create jobs, and continue Minnesota's position as a global leader in agriculture. Last session, the House Climate Caucus recommended $20 million for this program, and this committee supported the first iteration of this bill, ultimately resulting in a $500,000 appropriation for a pilot effort. The MDA has been working with stakeholders to design that pilot program and expects to begin soliciting grant applications in March. My company purchases grain grown by the city of Edgerton in southwestern Minnesota, where their city water nitrate levels have been reduced by 40% in the last 2 years because of Kernza planted around their wellheads. With this investment, we can scale up our systems and bring the water benefits of Kernza to more rural communities. We need bigger seed cleaners and more efficient cracker production to create sustained market pull that can bring Kernza to life. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of this important legislation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Next is Wilbur De La Rosa. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Bang and members of the committee. My name is Wilbur De La Rosa. I am an immigrant. I am an entrepreneur and a farmer in Byron, Minnesota. And I am the manager of Farmer Outreach and Technical Assistance for the Regenerative Agricultural Lands based in northern Minnesota. This organization have to develop a poultry production system under regenerative practice. Thanks to the scientific research combined with indigenous knowledge, using hazelnut and elderberry, we have managed to imitate the natural environment of the chickens, reducing the stress of the animal that we raise, producing the best chicken meat in the country, and at the same time, diversifying the production of each associated farm. After much research, we have chosen hazelnut and elderberry as a perennial crop that make perfect synergy with the chicken we breed. And that is how we can offer other farmers a scalable, replicable production system with positive economic, environmental, and social effects. I strongly support House File 1645. As Christopher mentioned before me, this project can be capital intensive. State support will allow us to provide more service to our farmer network, which include many immigrants, emerging, and backup farmers who are interested in regenerative and traditional form of agriculture. Some examples of value chain investment for hazelnut and elderberry include nurseries, custom mechanical harvest equipment, new processing lines, storage, distribution, value-added products, and market development. We were very glad to see that this program received pilot-scale funding last session, and now it's time to grow the program. Our organization doesn't operate in a vacuum. We need a healthy business and farming ecosystem for regenerative agriculture. So we want to see our partners and others in our community do well too. Our organization is just one of the many business and organizations that can benefit from this bill, and your support will help us reach our goals. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you. And then next we have Ann Swaljural from Minnesota Farmers Union. Oh, she's not testifying? Okay. All right. Sounds good. And then that is all for testimony. I think Colin Currington, you are... Do you have a testimony, or are you here for answering questions?
Thank you, Chair. I'd be glad to answer questions on behalf of this bill.
All right. Thank you for being here. And with that, I'm not aware of any amendments, and so discussion to the bill. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Brand, we've had this session a lot of presentations and audits on grants management, and I'm just checking. This notes on line 1.7 for grants to organizations. So I'm assuming those are nonprofits, not for profit.
Representative Brand.
One second. Which line are you talking about?
Line 1.7.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you repeat the question? Sorry.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Look on lines 1.7, four grants to organizations. So I'm assuming those are nonprofits, not for-profit. Is that correct?
Representative Brand.
My understanding that these would be for a combination of both, for-profits and nonprofits.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That might need some adjusting in language then if it's organizations. And then would these grants fall under the same requirements for grants management that, say, deed grants and other grants are? That's the transparency. Who they go to, all of those things.
Representative Brand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, absolutely. The Department of Agriculture will be monitoring the grants and the grant process. And actually, the grant process for this year is still in development. And so, absolutely, I would want to ensure that that's the case.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Along those same lines, Representative Brand, most appropriations have administrative set-aside for the department to administer these grants. In your bill, I don't see any of that. How is that going to be handled by the department, and will these simply be passed through, and how will they be administered and awarded?
For that question, I would actually phone a friend with the department. They can better answer that question for you.
Do we have someone from the department?
I'm sorry. Oh. Colin. Let's give Colin, the guy right next to me. Maybe he's got an answer.
Director Colin.
Thank you, Madam and Representative. First, just to introduce myself, my name is Colin Kiritson. I work as the Director of Adoption and Scaling for the commercialization team of the Forever Green Initiative. And I can speak to how that is structured in the pilot program that MDA will be releasing in the next few weeks. I believe about 10% of that funding, of that $500,000, was reserved for administration of the program that will be launched in the coming weeks. I think they reserved between $50,000 to $60,000, and the remaining about $440,000 will be available for grants in the pilot program. So I could expect a similar structure in an expanded program.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, it doesn't say that in the bill, and this money is going to the Department of Agriculture, but you're saying it's going to go eventually to Forever Green. Is that correct?
Director Collin.
Thank you, Madam and Representative. This bill very intentionally does not go to Forever Green researchers or the University of Minnesota. It is a program that would allocate resources to the Department of Agriculture to administer on behalf of the state and its interests in farmers, rural communities in the state of Minnesota directly to these organizations, both for-profit and nonprofit, very intentionally not routing these funds through the university and directing them to the Department of Agriculture to structure and administer the grant program.
Representative Anderson.
Again, to the testifier, what are the guardrails here? There's nothing in the bill language that talks about how they're going to be administered and who is going to be doing it. So just concerned that, we don't have the Wild West here with folks coming in to apply for these grants. And that's a lot of money, $10 million for. I don't imagine there are a lot of processors in Minnesota right now that will be able to handle some of these crops. So we're talking of a few organizations that will have access to $10 million in grants. I guess I would feel more comfortable if there were more guardrails around the actual administration of the program.
Would you like to respond, Representative Brand?
Yeah, absolutely willing to work with you. Let's get that done. I mean, that's fine with me. I'm happy to adjust the bill however we need to make you feel comfortable with the legislation that we can get these grants out there and invest in, and in the economy in Minnesota.
Representative Jacob.
Well, thank you, Chair Vang. So the term kickstart was used. So what I'm wondering is there like a foreseeable end to this program where it's accomplished what it needs to accomplish, or are we investing in like building a government bureaucracy that will carry on forever? And if there is an end to it, when would you see the program accomplishing what we intended to accomplish?
Representative Brand.
To start the conversation, and then I will kick it over to Colin, I think it's important for me to address this at first. You know, I would say that, you know, we make a lot of investments to the state, and sometimes these investments are used as leverage in the private market, in the private sector to get more money and to get more bang for that buck. We do the same thing with cities and counties when we talk about matching dollars and matching aid and that sort of thing. What I would say is that eventually this gets to a point, I envision this gets to a point where the market is, you know, taking care of itself, where there are actual people that have infrastructure in place, where they actually have the physical power in place to do these types of things. Just the same with Forever Green and that whole initiative. Now, you know, Forever Green's got a suite of different agricultural crops that they're working on. Some are more easily deliverable, some require more research, but they're working on these in a very scientific and very thoughtful way to produce what I would consider to be the crops of the future, at least in some way or fashion. And so, you know, I think this early investment will eventually be to the point where it's we're going to get a great product out of it. I don't anticipate coming back in, you know, in future legislatures, I don't think in 10, 20 years, we're still going to be talking about this. I think that these things are going to be on the ground, that they're going to be doing what they're supposed to be doing, and that we're going to have another tool in the toolbox for our agricultural economy here in Minnesota. And then Colin, if you want to.
Representative Jacob.
Yeah, so you said 10 to 20 years. So how long do you see, when do you project it would be self-sustainable?
Dr. Colin.
Madam Chair and Representative, the recurring funding ask is in recognition of the development of this suite strategy that Representative Brand mentioned. We've talked a lot about Kernza, but just to mention Camelina, Pennycress, Winter Pea, we expect those to be developed reasonably over the next, say, 10 to 15 years with, you know, the jumpstart of those industries in the ensuing years once we have a minimum viable product. So I think it's reasonable to say that Forever Green is a generational but not indefinite project. We're seeking to develop new technologies, launch those onto the landscape, and continue to identify the next suite of grand challenges and work on those at the University of Minnesota.
Final follow-up, Representative Jacob?
Okay. That's good. Thank you.
All right. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank and acknowledge some of my constituents who are up here, and I've had the pleasure of getting to partner with all of you and share their wonderful expertise with you, Representative Brand. I've been able to see some of these products be beneficial in year one for farmers, folks who are grazing their animals, getting the multiple benefit from here, and also then being able to support startup companies like Perennial Pantry. We have seen this build our rural communities and our small towns, as well as supporting farmers and entrepreneurs and soil health. So I really thank you for bringing this bill, and I'm a strong supporter. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion? Closing remarks, Representative Brand?
Yeah, I would like to thank the committee for hearing this bill, and let's talk about some of the things that we talked about in the committee that we can make this bill stronger and make folks more comfortable with the language and that sort of thing. I'm happy to do that. I think at the end of the day, you know, we have an inherent responsibility at the legislature to do some of these things in our agricultural system. And that will provide another tool in the toolbox, create some more opportunity for agriculture here in Minnesota, just the same as with regards to what other states also have in place as well, things like Kansas and that sort of thing. I have folks in my own district who are growing different cover crops. They're doing different cropping systems and working on this as well. And I would say that the opportunities are there. I know that Shell's Brewing is just, it's in my neighborhood. They're talking about putting out a Kernza beer in the future as well, and it's exciting for those opportunities. I see there's a Kernza beer in the corner there as well, and I see these other products that are also here. One interesting fact that I remembered from a couple of years back was we get a variety, we get the most of our elderberry from Europe. We don't get it from America. And these are opportunities for us to grow the things here that we can use here. And so, you know, as we look at this as an opportunity, I know that there is a cost associated with that, but I do know that there is a benefit as well. And so I look forward to continuing to have future conversations with you all. And, you know, offline, if you have any additional questions, happy to to guide you in the right direction. Thank you.
All right, with that, I renew my motion that House File 1645 be laid over for possible inclusion. House File 1645 is laid over for possible inclusion. The next bill we have is House File 1314, Representative Purcell on carbon storage contract provisions. Thank you to the FFA students for being here today. Today is FFA Day, so hopefully members have had a chance to meet with the students. And thank you to our testifiers and the previous two bills for making the commute to be here today. And with that, Representative Purcell, please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 1316 for the committee.
You mean 1314?
Sorry, 1314.
1314, okay. All right, to your bill, to House File 1314.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the first bill that I'm presenting today, House File 1314, is pretty simple. It prevents carbon market contracts from including a confidentiality clause that would limit farmers' ability to show their contracts or discuss them with others. This mirrors longstanding law barring confidentiality clauses in ag production. Most carbon storage contracts we're seeing come to farmers in Minnesota do actually have these clauses as part of the agreements, and it's currently a gray area. And so this legislation is just to clear that up.
All right. We have testifiers today, so welcome to the committee. First one is TJ Cortez. Okay. What about Pat Luneman?
Yes.
Please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Pat Luneman, dairy farmer from Todd County. Chair Vang and members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here today in support of House File 1314 by Representative Purcell. You had in your information packets the Farmer's Guide to Carbon Market Contracts. I had the privilege last year of serving. That guide was a collaboration of the Minnesota Department of Ag, Minnesota Farmers Union, and the Farmers Legal Action Group. I, as well as a few other people, served in an advisory role as that guide was put together. What I learned in putting together that guide is that the practices of entities seeking carbon credits from farmers through binding contracts is an environment without much structure, rules, or guidelines. The Farmer's Guide refers to this as the wild, wild west of contracts, and that was just mentioned here previously by Representative Anderson. So these contracts really are a wild, wild west. Many of our farmers are at a severe disadvantage to the buyers who are negotiating these contracts because those buyers are negotiating contracts every day. A good first step to level the playing field is to strike confidentiality provisions in the contracts, as House File 1314 states. This would be a good first step in providing transparency to move the market towards fair values between buyer and seller. We as farmers are willing to play a role in solving climate change. We just ask for an honest, transparent, and level playing field. I ask for adoption of House File 1314 to move closer to that goal. Thank you.
All right, thank you. I don't see any further testifiers. Do we have?
Mr. Curtis is here.
Oh,
not on this bill. Never mind.
Oh, not on this. Okay, sounds good on the next bill then. All right, are there any further testimony? Seeing none, we will move to the discussion of the bill. Any discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good to see you, Mr. Luneman. I basically agree with this. I'm just wondering if Mr. Sullivan or anybody could give us any guidance as to whether this would be interfering with the arm's length contracts between people, or are there any situations where we couldn't enter into something like this because of interfering with contract negotiations.
Mr. Sullivan?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, not that comes to mind offhand. The way the bill is drafted, it applies only to contracts that are entered into, renewed, or amended after July 1st of this year. So it wouldn't affect existing contracts that have already been negotiated or place, and this requirement applied to those going forward. So I don't. So that really addresses the contract clause issue in the state and federal constitutions. But I don't see beyond that, which is already addressed in the bill, any issues along the lines that you've raised.
Representative Anderson, okay. Further discussion? All right, hearing none. Closing remarks, Representative Purcell?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think more communication and more transparency is a good thing, and because this is a new and developing world out there, I hope that this is a thing we can put into place to try to safeguard and protect our farmers who may be entering these sorts of contracts. Thank you.
All right. Representative Purcell renews her motion that House File 1314 be laid over for possible inclusion. House File 1314 is laid over for possible inclusion. Our next bill is Representative Purcell again, House File 1316 on Soil Health Financial Assistance Program. Please move your bill, Representative Purcell.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. House File 1316 is very near and dear to my heart. Soil health is a space in agriculture where there's a broad coalition of supporters, where conventional row crop farmers in my district feel renewed and excited to farm again. It's been an on-ramp for my friends and neighbors to more and more soil health practices, rebuilding our precious topsoil that sustains life. There's also a lot of enthusiasm around this in my community of smaller scale organic farmer friends, and it's been a really beautiful place in my experience of the last decade or so of where we can come together. You will see in your packet there is a long list of supporters to this bill, and some of whom we will hear testimony from today as well. So I would love to turn over to testifiers.
We do have an amendment, so we'll go with your author's amendment first, and then we can move to testimony.
Oh, thank you, ma'am.
So if you can move your A2 amendment.
Yes, so moved.
All right. Please tell us about your A2 amendment.
So the A2 amendment predominantly puts the dollar amounts in there where we did not have dollar amounts before. Similar to the first bill that I presented on this committee for the co-op grants, so there's a maximum of $50,000 appropriated for a single entity, and this is putting $10 million in fiscal year 24, $2 million for fiscal 25. And just wanted to make sure that we were adequately funding this program, which has been very popular, and want to support adequately with funding.
All right. Discussion to the A2 amendment. All right. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The ayes have it and the motion prevails. The amendment A2 is adopted. Now the bill is in the shape of the author wants. So we'll move on to testimony. TJ Cortez, if you can identify yourself before the committee. And
thank you, Chair Vang, and the rest of the House Ag Committee. Thank you, Representative Purcell, for presenting House File 1316. My name is TJ Cardis. I live in Bloom Prairie, Minnesota. I'm a regional cell representative for South Butte Ag from Tangent, Oregon. In this role, I cover five states, including Minnesota, selling and helping producers with cover crops for seed and application. I also work with the dealership network and distributor network at the same time. I also help run Cardis Seeds with my wife, Kathy, and our two sons, David and Anthony. I'm here to support this bill from a unique perspective of seed and equipment providers who also have a role in supporting farmers to get soil health practices on the ground. This is a great bill because it will help get producers to apply cover crops to their operations, but we also have a front row seat in what makes this work. For farmers pursuing cover crops for the first time, they have concerns like where to source seed, whether they need to line up planes, high clearance machines, no-till drills, or other ground application equipment. Later in the fall, when farmers are busy harvesting, they don't have time to run the equipment. Businesses like ours have a crucial role in playing and making soil health programs work, because when growers are getting started on soil health building practices, they often have a lot of questions, sometimes fear about how to try to start a new soil health practice or where or how the benefits will be shown to them. Between the financial support from this program outlined in the bill and the business community, we can reduce hurdles for farmers facing these practice changes. For example, in our shop in Bloom Prairie, We line up cover crop seed, we warehouse the seed, we mix, we possibly deliver it to the farm. We also help walk farmers through the government contracts to make sure they get them done correctly. We also do the application work if need be. Other growers will apply it themselves. If they do, we supply them the seed. This bill proposed invests will provide needed support for producers to have financial resources to make this leap. And there's a community of businesses like ours that will stand ready to rise up the opportunity as a resource to support this expansion in the application of soil health practices. The bill presented to you today will help increase the adoption of soil health practices and all the benefits they provide. The more support and opportunities growers have to do cover crops, get them applied to their farms and do it successfully, will make this work. This bill will help with that. I'm here for any questions at this time.
All right. Our next testifier is Carolyn Olson from the Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation.
Carolyn? Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Carolyn Olson and I serve as the Vice President of the Minnesota Farm Bureau. Farm Bureau represents nearly 30,000 farm families across the state of Minnesota. I farm with my husband on our Century Farm in Lyon County. We started our transition to organic crop production in 1998 and now farm all our land organically. We have an extended crop rotation growing corn, soybeans, small grains, and alfalfa. We plant a cover crop mix of oats, daikon radish, and Bursum clover on the fields that had small grains after that grain is harvested. The cover crop mix are all annual varieties since we need them to winter kill as we cannot use herbicides. Organic production relies on mechanical tillage for weed control. Even though we cultivate the row crops in the summer and use various tillage tools in the fall, our soil tests show that we are building organic matter. Farmers care deeply about the environment and continue to be stewards of the land. We ensure the future success of our farm by taking care of the ground and securing nutrients in the soil. Minnesota has a very diverse range of soil types across the state, and one size does not fit all. Representative Purcell's bill allows for a wide variety of practices that provide farmers the possibility to make active decisions about what will work best on their farm, depending on where they live. These grants will actively put conservation practices on the ground through a wide variety of eligible expenses that are often too big of a barrier for farmers to overcome on their own, especially as they are taking risks to be leaders amongst their peers. There is a liability you take as a farmer when first implementing soil health practices, and if you don't implement the practices just right, you risk a major financial hit. This bill helps to mitigate some of those risks among farmers who are looking to be a progressive leader. Minnesota Farm Bureau supports voluntary, market-based approaches to soil health and to environmental practices. By providing a grant program with broad reach, we can continue to help farmers do what is best on their land and remove some of the prohibitive financial barriers that they face as they look for innovations to improve soil health. We care deeply about the environment, and we ask for your support on this program. Thank you, Representative Purcell, for bringing this bill forward, and I stand for any questions.
All right, thank you, Carolyn. The next one is Pat Luneman. If you can identify yourself before the committee again.
Patrick Luneman, a dairy farmer from Todd County. Thank you, Chair Vang and members of the committee. It's again a privilege to talk on this bill. I ask for support for House File 1316, authored by Representative Purcell, which is the Soil Health Financial Assistance Program. As one of two farmers on the Governor's Climate Change Advisory Council, I can tell you that this bill fits the vision of the climate change framework released in September. Improved soil health equals carbon capture equals a climate win. In the conversation with climate experts and farmer leaders across Minnesota, the advisory council process determined that there was a vast need for modern equipment, technology, and things as simple as cover crop seed. We had long discussions about where's the seed going to come from. We really did. And then how are you going to get it all planted on time? So if farmers are to be successful in enhancing soil health, they need the tools available to perform their tasks well and on time. I appreciate that House File 1316 is broad and does not just focus on cover crops. There's a lot more to solving better soil health than just cover crops. The Climate Advisory Council believes that an all-of-the-above approach must be used if we are to make progress on soil health and climate change. The funding in the bill, as proposed, is to work through the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and I believe that's the correct route, but the money should eventually end up, as is in the bill, in our local government agencies. The best example that we on the farm have is our local soil and water conservation districts, and we need to be sending the funds through existing programs and entities that already are working with farmers, that have the farmers' trust, and have a track record of success. This bill has broad support from the ag community. You know, I'm a member of a number of different farm groups and play leadership roles, and most of their names are in support of this bill. I believe this bill will build on the success from the existing program, and remember that greater soil health is a climate win. I urge you to move this bill forward. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And finally, we have Anne from Minnesota Farmers Union.
This time on this side of the table. Thank you, Chair Vane, and members of the committee. Again, for the record, my name is Ann Schwagel, and I'm a farmer in Big Stone County. I also have the honor to serve as the Vice President of Minnesota Farmers Union, and I'm proud to share our strong support for this proposal. We're proud to have worked with a broad coalition of farm groups to establish the pilot Representative Purcell's bill builds on, some of whom we've already heard from here today. But personally, for me as a farmer, this program is hugely exciting because I want to continue to do more soil health work on my farm. However, the initial cost of adoption is such that it's extremely hard for us to implement new practices. Take cover crops as an example. Because of the short growing season in western Minnesota, we have a very narrow window in order to get cover crops interseeded into our row crops. And that takes specialized equipment, which costs at a minimum five figures. And as with everything else, you can imagine that the price has gone up in the last few years. As young farmers with a young family, that's not money that we just have laying around. Long term, we think that we can make this practice work financially and practically on our farming operation. And a state program would help us get over that initial cost of adoption, which would be hugely helpful. That's just one example from one farmer of how this program will help us continue to improve our soil health for generations to come. Thank you for the opportunity to testify and to represent Purcell for her leadership in advance and in advance for your support.
All right, thank you. Seeing no further testifiers, discussion to the bill. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Vang, and Representative Purcell. Thank you for bringing this bill forward, and you know, it's I do some cover crops on my farm as well, and Ms. Schwagel, you've touched on a lot of subjects that are important. We have a short growing season in Minnesota. There's a lot of challenges with that, and you know, I think you know, finding something that fits in our farms, you know, is important. And when there's not extra funds, oftentimes you know, we work on very slim margins, and when we're trying to do the right thing, it can be easy to just do what we've always done because that's the way it's been done, and not try new things because there is a cost there. And I think that it's important to be able to have some funding mechanisms to be able to try some of these, and you know, being able to go through the SWCD and others, you know, really is important with that. I had about 2 weeks ago, the Minnesota milk producers were down here, and there was one of them that I was visiting with that farms right in the corner of Wright County, Carver County, and Hennepin County. And last fall, he had gotten some, talked with his county's SWCDs on getting some cost share to be able to try some, you know, implement some cover crop, and he found it interesting that that Wright County, they covered the highest percentage of it. Carver County, they were somewhere in the middle, and there was no programs available in Hennepin County. And he just found it was interesting that it's, as a somebody in agriculture, oftentimes we feel that we have a target on our back by some of our urban neighbors. And that somebody, you know, here was Hennepin County had no cost share programs available for cover crops. And so it was more of a comment than a question. But, you know, it's something that, you know, I think that it's, you know, it's important to be statewide on this. And probably for the seed guy, I'm sorry, I forgot your name, but do you use any drones or have you used any of that for seeding in crop?
TJ?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nelson, yes, we actually have started a program now where we're working with a different mix to make it work from beans to corn. And that has been one of our stumbling stones in the ag industry is grass in front of our corn. That's always scared producers, and it should scare producers because it can get out of control and be a mess. So we've started a program with some drone companies to try to do some research. We flew it actually on with a plane last year. So we did red clover, crimson clover, winter camelina, which was testified earlier about I use it as a cover crop seed, but there is an oil market for it, and a kale product. We put a little bit of oats with it to bulk it up so the plane could fly it on. But that's a mix of 10 pounds. And with the drone applications, that's something that could work. So we have a pilot project by Medford, Minnesota. We have 160 acres. We have a pilot project down in Iowa. So if that works, we're going to try to do a field day this spring, look at it, have the guys strip till into it, and see if we can make that work. But I really think in the beans, that is something that we're going to be able to make work, is a mix of that type of product. Because it's a high seed count, low application rate, and we still get a terrific cover crop out of it. So I think that's where drones, if you're just flying cereal rye, the drones are really ineffective because there's just not enough volume. I mean, planes, that's where the planes work. You fly a lot of volume with cereal rye. But with this going from beans to corn, I think that's one that we can really promote, and it's going to give us our soil health benefits that we're really looking for in front of a corn crop.
Representative Nelson?
Madam Chair?
Oh, Representative Purcell?
Thank you. I wanted to just respond to Representative Nelson's comment. So we farmed right on the border of two counties as well, Dakota and Rice County, and working in the watershed where we had six different SWCDs who were our closest partners. It varies widely. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one reason why this program, I'm hopeful that going through MDA that there might be a more thorough approach to that. But as you were talking, Mr. Cardes and I were just like, oh yeah, we hear this all the time. Like this is a regular occurrence that the political boundaries can get in the way sometimes of the levels of support for growers who want to do the right thing. And so I'm hopeful that this could alleviate some of that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson? All right. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Purcell, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Representative Brand in terms of grants management. We've had all these audits on grants management, and would these grants fall under the same requirements as the other grants that we've been having?
Representative Purcell?
That's my understanding, but I'm also happy to phone a friend and ask the Department of Ag. They're here and they know about that.
All right, I see someone coming to the testifying table. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Hello, I'm Brad Jordahl-Redland. I'm a manager of the Soil Health Financial Assistance Program and the Minnesota AgriQuality Certification Program at MDA. Mm-hmm. Short answer is, yeah, we will have, well, we already have set up the pilot effort in this as authorized during the last legislative session. We officially follow all the Office of Grants Management rules on that, and we'll certainly maintain that with this new source of funding.
Representative Hansen?
And a follow-up, and maybe it's Mr. Redland, but Representative Purcell. So for a burn down on a cover crop, use glyphosate Roundup, would this grant go towards buying a sprayer?
Representative Purcell?
Partially.
Mr. Jordahl Redland, perhaps? Please proceed.
Well, I can speak to the pilot program that we are operating currently. This is obviously separate legislation from our work, but The way it's structured right now is that the applicant has to provide a rationale for why they need a piece of equipment for soil health purposes. Folks working in soil health know there's a series of principles of soil health. So in an application process, they will identify the equipment rather than us making a limited, you know, five items of equipment or something like that. We allow the applicants to say what their soil health need and goal is, and then why the particular equipment will help them achieve that goal.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So theoretically, you could buy pesticide application equipment.
Mr.
It would be potentially possible, yes.
Any further question? TJ?
Could I comment on that, please?
Please proceed.
So I have multiple dealers that actually have bought high-rig sprayers, like you're talking about, and they spray in the spring with it. Then they change it over and use it as a cover crop applicator system in the fall, early fall. And that's the high-clearance machines I talked about. So there is something that you're using one machine for two different things. So you're spraying in the spring, terminating the cover crop, which is part of it, and then using the fall to reseed your cover crop. So I really think in that way that might actually play into this bill if you looked at it where you're using it for two different roles on the operation.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Purcell, we'd heard the talk going around the Capitol that there may have been an additional amendment dealing with what we're talking about now, pesticide, fertilizer use, and some curtailment of those things. Your thoughts on that, and you know, I think that puts up a red flag for a lot of farmers, and is that something that could possibly be added down the road?
Representative Purcell?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Lead Anderson. That is not in the proposal before us, so some conversations have been happening, and I'm open to conversations on that continuing, but for now, that is not part of my bill.
Representative Anderson?
Yeah, just a quick question. I think the limit on the grants in this program were to be $50,000. And to the Department of Ag, do you see this replacing the Ag BMP program? I mean, this is a grant. Doesn't have to be repaid. Ag BMP loans do. So is there a future for both of those programs, or will this eventually supplant that, do you think?
Representative Purcell? Go ahead.
I guess my take, I'm not as familiar with the Ag BMP program, but I think to have lots of tools in the toolbox is great. But if Mr. Jordal Redland can speak further to that, I'm happy to have him go. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Representative. We actually believe that they will be paired potentially often because it will be able to provide the down payment that the loan can then actually finance the rest of the purchase with for this various soil health equipment pieces.
Okay. Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Bang. So the machine that you're talking about that can be putting on spray application in the spring and then high clearance and put cover crops on in the fall, what's the price of that machine?
Right now at the door, the new one that the general, Chairman Bang, thank you very much, Representative Jacobson. The machine that he put together right now costs $475,000. That was with no technology in it. When he put the technology, it was over $500,000.
Okay, so I'm just...
Jacob.
Thank you. Just so for references, a $10 million bill and $50,000 maximum to a single recipient, this could potentially only help 20 people at those kind of prices. Just saying how expensive farm equipment is.
Yes. Would you like to respond, Representative Purcell?
Yep. I don't have a response. I agree.
Okay. But so,
Representative Jacob.
So, when I first looked at this, you know, I'm envisioning attachments for my no-till planter from, you know, 40 years ago, my John Deere 7000, whatever, attachments that might be $1,000 a row, and this could really be helpful. But when you start looking at the price of that kind of machinery. That seems like that needs to be something that plays out in the open market without government assistance for that kind of pricing.
All right. Yes. Representative Purcell. Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, I think that's why I'm open to the discussion about the limits, too. So, of course, if your cost is $1,000, then we'd like to make sure that that cost gets to the person if you just need to modify your equipment. This is not for, you wouldn't be able to purchase an entirely new piece of equipment, you know, with that $50,000 limit to try to make sure that there's on-ramps available for lots of folks to go further into these types of practices.
Yeah. Representative Sapke.
Thank you, Chair Vang. I just wanted to clarify that it's currently in the bill is $10 million and $50,000 each is 200 different, so it's not 20. It's 200 different farmers that will be included in this, and there are obviously other things. But I just want to make sure that 200 is very different than 20, so I just wanted to make sure we're in the same place.
Okay. Representative Cha.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
All right. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Representative Purcell, closing remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to all of my testifiers who bring really important lived experience and the folks who have worked on the pilot project. And happy to continue conversation to make this piece of legislation better. Thank you.
All right. Representative Purcell renews her motion that House File 1316 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion. House File 1316 as amended is laid over for possible inclusion. All right. Thank you, members, and thank you to our testifiers for making the commute to be here today. Our next meeting is actually tomorrow, Wednesday, at 6 p.m. Due to snow days that we have from last week, we need to make up our committee hearing. We will be in SOB room 10. Room 10. And this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.